Epilogue. It took a special kind of man to claim he was a god, and to actually have people believe him. In the Vorin tradition, humility was a sign of nobility, and a man seeking to take leadership upon himself was immediately suspect. To set oneself up as a herald, well, to accomplish the deed successfully would take an incredible combination indeed. He would have to be humble but not self-effacing, powerful but not domineering. He would have to be an excellent leader and a fine warrior, yet be as wise as an aged stormkeeper. He would need straightforwardness in purpose, yet retain an indefinable weight of mystery about him. He would need to be the greatest of men.
"You made me want to believe," Jasnah thought,
laying a hand on Tom's cold cheek. "And that's more than I've ever felt before." Tom lay on a stone altar in the funeral tent. A sheet covered the lower half of his body, but he was naked from the waist up. Only one wound marred his body. A small thing, really, placed expertly between his ribs. It seemed a mockery that such a mighty man had been felled by a wound so seemingly innocent. "I always told him to wear shard plate," Jasnah thought, "but he never would." "Such a stubborn man you were, Talanel Elin." Perhaps she had let the men rely upon him too much. The logical, prudent Jasnah should have foreseen the damage his death would cause to morale. Yet she realized now that she too had come to rely upon him. Too much? Perhaps. One side effect of being heartless was that one rarely had to deal with emotional shock. She had been far too unprepared for the backlash of grief she had felt at his death. A crowd had gathered outside. She could hear their shuffling and their murmuring. Many now claimed that they had always seen through Tom's facade, that they had only pretended to believe because they knew it was good for troop cohesion. Others were still faithful. They waited for the final proof Tom had promised them, if inadvertently.
"When heralds die, their bodies turn to smoke."
He had spoken the words in the holy city, when explaining why there were no bones to accompany the buried shard blades. It was a popular legend, known to many of the people. Heralds were not truly human, despite their form. When they died, their bodies were taken to the dwelling to await the next return. Tom did not turn to smoke. Jasnah didn't want to let the people dwell on this fact. Barely a few hours had passed since the final battle with Vaidenar, but she had ordered his pyre readied anyway. "Oh, Tom," she thought. She wanted to weep, but there was nothing within to give. That was another side effect of being heartless. Besides, what reason did she have to complain or grieve? She had received what she had always desired, had she not? A strong political union that gave her a great deal of power, a king who respected her and gave her freedom to be involved in his affairs. With Meridas as her husband and Dalinar as her king, she would always be at the center of Alethkar's workings. She had never wanted love. Love was for people who couldn't hope for something supposedly greater. Power.
"What a waste my life has been," she thought, with a sudden feeling of sickness.
"My lady?"
a guard asked from the tent door. Jasnah turned. "Yes?"
"There's a man here," the guard said hesitantly. "He... well, my lady? He claims to know the Lord Herald."
Jasnah frowned. "No? No how?"
"He claims to be the man's brother-in-law," the soldier explained.
Jasnah felt a chill. "Let him in." The man who entered was of humble stature. He had a ring of baldness at the top of his head, and he appeared to have a nervous twitch of the fingers. He kept his eyes low,
though he did glance at Tom's corpse.
"What is this foolishness you told my guard?" Jasna asked.
"I'm sorry for being foolish, my lady," the man said quickly, his voice thick with a Rimac accent. "But I do speak the truth. That man, the Lord Herald, well, his other name is Tavan. He married my sister, my lady. We come from a village in Rimac, Kalinhas. Your army passed it on the way north, back when you were there."
He looked up hopefully, as if expecting her to remember the village. "Go on," Jasna said. "Why didn't you speak of this earlier?"
"Well, my lady," the man said with embarrassment, "Tavan seemed to be doing so well for himself, you see. And when I spoke to him that once, he didn't even seem to recognize me. I figured that he either didn't want me to tell others about him, or that he didn't right remember himself. Ever since the accident happened, well, Tavan never was right in the head after that."
Jasna eyed the man critically. "Come to seek after some compensation by claiming to be Tom's relative? That would be a very bold move, and this man doesn't seem the type." "What proof do you have of these allegations?" she asked.
"Proof, my lady?"
the man asked, as if he had never considered that she would ask such of him.
"Well, I don't know. Tavan did have a rather strange birthmark on the back of his neck."
Jasna relaxed. She had seen no such thing while helping prepare the body for its cremation. The man was either mistaken or lying.
"It's there, right near the hairline, my lady," the man promised. "You should look."
Jasna paused. Near the hairline. She might not have seen it if Tom's hair were in the way. She didn't want to look. However, the logical side of her was fed up with being ignored. She reached out, turning his head and pushing back the hair. She paused. "What did this birthmark look like?"
An oval sort of shape, my lady," the man said. "Or at least I think that's what it was. He was kind of sensitive about people looking at it, he was."
Jasna lowered her hand, then placed Tom's head back in its restful position. The birthmark was there, and the mystery had been solved. She had been right all along. Why did that make her feel so depressed? "Tell me about him," she requested. "You say that he was married?"
"Well, he was when my sister was still alive," the peasant said. "Tavan was always a special man. He could make people listen to what he had to say. They liked him, even when they first met him. He grew up in Kalinhas, in the house next to my own, but he left when he was just a lad. He promised my sister he'd come back, and he did, some 5 years later. Said he'd spent the time training with a mercenary group, learning to fight, he said. He was tired of Kalinhas being pushed around by any bandit or thief who decided to force us to give him a levy. Well, he organized us and taught us. We learned to fight pretty well, I'd say. He married my sister. He was a smart one, Tavan was. Said he'd learned to read with the mercenaries from a woman who'd once been a noble woman in Alethkar. He didn't care that it was a woman's art. To him, it was just another skill to learn. He had books too, my lady. I don't know where he got them, but they were old. He found them fighting somewhere in Rimac, I suppose. Maybe the holy city itself, do you think?"
"I really don't know," Jasna said. "Continue."
"Well, he knew all kinds of strange things," the peasant said. "Was always telling them to people, though they didn't make any sense to us. Pretty random, those things he said and things he knew. But he did train us good, and he fought like nothing else, my lady. He was so good at it, Bandits soon learned to stay away from Callenhaus, I'll tell you that. 10 years he led our town, and we were beginning to think pretty good of ourselves. But then...
Well? Jasna asked.
Well, the local despot, a real nasty man named Kess, he decided he was tired of Callenhaus ignoring his threats. He got together a lot of men, more than were even in our village, and he attacked. In the end, we just couldn't stop them. Remak's a hard place, my lady. Seems like for every man who has a mind to work for his food, there are 2 men waiting to take it from him. They got through eventually, though Tavin, he killed a number. In the end, Kess left Tavin alive. Killed my sister and Tavin's son, though. Killed them in an awful, brutal way, and made Tavin watch. After that, well, Tavin wasn't the same, like I said. We learned to do what Kess said, but Tavin, he just left. Walked away in a daze, and none of us had a mind to stop him, not with Kess's men watching us. And, well, that's about it. That was 5 years ago. I thought Tavin dead for sure, until that day your army passed and I went out to see the Herald for myself. I don't know what he did during those 5 years, but I really don't think he recognized me. Tavin wasn't ever very good at pretending. Jasna nodded, closing her eyes. Oh, my dear poor Tom. Is that what you saw? Those times when your madness almost took you? The times where your eyes fuzzed and you got that look of terror in your eyes? Was it her being tortured? No wonder you wanted to forget. Jasna opened her eyes. Thank you, citizen. Praesh, the man said.
You will be compensated, citizen Praesh, Jasna promised. But I do want you to keep quiet about these things. The army wanted a herald, and your brother-in-law became one for them. I don't want to taint their memory of him.
Of course, my lady, the man said. But if it pleases you...
What?
Jasna asked. I didn't come here for gems, my lady,
the man said, hands still twitching slightly.
I came for his body. You see, well, I want to make certain he's properly taken care of.
I will see to that, Jasna promised. But that is all, citizen Praesh, Jasna said firmly. The man jumped slightly, then bowed and backed from the room. Jasna turned to regard Tal'n's slumbering corpse again. I don't blame you for the lies, she finally decided, resting a hand on his shoulder. For to you, I don't think they really were lies. In fact, I think Brother Lon was right. We could use a few more liars like you.
Merrin stepped quietly into the room. The battle was over, his armor removed, yet his arm still felt numb from his calling of the winds. Lord Dalinar still sat inside, cradling Renarin's near-lifeless body. Because of the battle's chaotic aftermath, the reunion, such that it was, had only happened a few minutes before. Dalinar had been warned, but that hadn't made much of a difference. The great tyrant Bane, the king of Alethkar, was crying. Merrin stood embarrassed in the doorway of the stone chamber, one of many in the Teth Kanar palace. This is my fault. I didn't cause Renarin's injury, but I am responsible. That's what Renarin himself taught me. It isn't about choosing right. It's about accepting the consequences for what you have done.
You saved my kingdom, Dalinar whispered, not looking up from his son's comatose face. But you took my last son from me. I don't know if I can reward you enough, and I don't know if I can ever forgive you.
There was only one response. Meryn had steeled himself for it weeks before. He walked into the room, stepping firmly, and stuck his shard blade into the ground at Dalinar's feet. "You gave a command many months ago," Meryn said. "You said that anyone who disobeyed would be stripped of blade and rank. I accept your judgment." He reached out and, clenching his teeth, knocked his opal free of the blade. He would almost sooner have knocked the heart from his chest. He picked the black stone up off the ground and put it in his cloak pocket. Dalinar's cloak. That he did not intend to return. Meryn turned, knowing there was no more to be said, and walked toward the doorway.
"I do not demand this of you, Meryn," Dalinar said from behind.
"No,"
Meryn said, turning. Dalinar had finally looked up at him.
"But I believe honor does. Besides, I don't think I was ever really that good at being a nobleman. Or a soldier, for that matter. Not in my heart, at least."
"What will you do?"
Dalinar asked. Meryn paused.
"Go back to my village," he said. "Or perhaps find a different one. A place where I can become a farmer again. I think I need a break."
"I shall see that you have a horse," Dalinar said, "and a constant supply of feed to keep it. Go with the thanks of Alethkar."
Meryn nodded and turned to leave. He couldn't help noticing, however, that Dalinar didn't seem to feel much sorrow at Meryn's abdication.
"To him, I will always be the one who persuaded his son to leave, then brought the boy back as a mindless invalid. Honor wouldn't let him shun me for it, but it would let him hate me."
It was better for both of them this way.
On a sullen, misty morning, Shinri's ship finally reached the Thalen docks. She stepped from the vessel, thankful for the firmness beneath her feet. Though she had come to enjoy the ocean, there was a rightness to the solid ground. It felt good to step upon it again. She paused, looking northward for a moment, pulling her cloak tight and staring across the open waters. She couldn't see much through the fog. Eventually, she turned and called out to the dockmaster, asking him to send for a city guardsman. She'd learned her lesson last time. She would not make King Amelin search for her this time. He came immediately. In fact, she was surprised at how quickly the king made it to the docks. She had expected him to send a litter for her, but not to come in person. Yet after just a short period of waiting, she saw him emerge from the mist beside her ship, trailing his awakener and stormkeeper counselors behind him. As soon as he saw her, he smiled, but his eyes grew troubled.
"Shinri, it is you."
Shinri smiled. "King Amelin, I seem to recall you offering me sanctuary in Thalena some time before. Is the proposal still in effect?"
"Oh, Shinri, child," Amelin said. "Wife of King Arvin Vaidenal. Else caller with power over the Oath Gates themselves."
"Are those things problems?" Shinri asked hesitantly.
"No," King Amelin said sorrowfully. "But they are terrible, terrible advantages. The kind of advantages a king prays to receive, but then fears the Almighty might actually listen to him." He sighed. "But come, child. We will see you situated."
Shinri paused. Something seemed wrong. She pulled her cloak tighter. "And if I change my mind?" she said, glancing back at her ship.
"Then I will be forced to insist," Amelin said,
waving for several soldiers to appear out of the mist and move toward her ship. Shinri backed away, growing cold.
"Not you," she whispered. "Not you too."
"I am not a monster, child," Amelin promised. You came here for refuge, and I will give it to you, and anything else you desire. But when the time comes, I may need your assistance.
Another prison, Shinri realized. Each one prettier than the last, but each one just as restrictive.
She lowered her head as two more soldiers appeared from the mist and moved to her sides.
Nowhere was safe, she realized. No one could be trusted. How many times would she need to learn this lesson?
She raised her head, steeling herself as Jasnah had always taught. She had escaped from Avon and then from Meron. She would simply have to do the same again.
My lady, said a familiar yet surprising voice.
Jasnah looked up from her funeral preparations and was stunned by what she saw.
Balinmar?
The old man smiled, shaking his head in amazement as he walked into the tent.
Lady Jasnah, he said warmly, I never thought to see you alive again. How did you survive the attack on the palace?
I was led out by a friend, Jasnah said, through a passage in the cellars. What of you? I had given you up for dead.
Balinmar's grandfatherly smile deepened.
I was visiting relatives in an outlying city at the time. Pure chance, though I thank the Almighty for it. I guess these old bones have some years in them yet.
But how did you come to be here? Jasnah asked.
The Vaden forces took me captive when they passed through my town, Balinmar said. Someone must have betrayed me. I know not why the Vaden king didn't execute me. He seemed to enjoy interrogating me, though I tried to explain that I was just an irrelevant, tired old man.
Amazing, Jasnah said, shaking her head.
Indeed. But you must return to your preparations.
The old man paused, glancing at Tarn's body.
There will be time for chatting at another time.
Jek Sun-Sun Valano, Truthless of Shinovar, stumbled, his hands and feet bound, as the soldiers tugged him through the city. His body was weak and battered. The Windrunner's power had thrown him with a nonchalant twist of air. If Jek had doubted the Onyx Seers, he could no longer delude himself. The old powers had indeed returned to the men of the East. But such things were no longer his problem. Execution undoubtedly awaited him. By now, the Aleth commanders would be discovering just who he was and how closely he had served Avon. When they discovered who had slain their herald, perhaps they already knew. The guards were being unreasonably rough with him. Yes, he could see it in their eyes. They hated him. Well, after his sins, he looked forward to a good, clean execution. He had waited a long time to die. Your master still lives. The warning of honor came from within as Jek stumbled against yet another stone falling against the rocks. Holy, blessed stone. How he wished he hadn't seen Avon being held captive. How he wished he could convince himself that the idiot king was dead. Your master still lives. Jek had to serve still, though he hated and loathed himself for it. He had to serve. The soldiers were getting impatient. One tugged on the rope again. Jek lay a few streets inside the city gates near a stone house crusted with cromstone.
Please, Jek said, intentionally increasing his accent. Do not let me rot in a cell. There is no truth. Give me a knife. Let me kill myself here, honorably.
One of the guards snorted, but the idea seemed to appeal to the second man.
I give my oath, Jek said, his stomach twisting. I will use the blade only on myself. In Shinovar, this request would never be rejected by men of honor.
The uncertain guard looked to his companion. Finally, the man shrugged. They were in an inconspicuous location.
I suppose, he said slowly. The other man pulled out his belt knife and tossed it at Jack's feet. Jack picked up the weapon in bound hands, crouching pathetically before the two soldiers, both obviously confident that they could control one wounded, helpless man. It's all right, the second soldier said. In my entire life, I've never met a Shin who would lie. Jack closed his eyes, unsheathing the blade. You just did, he thought.
The funeral ceremony took place as evening finally fell. Thousands came for the event. Despite the work to be done, despite wounds and losses, despite fatigue, they came to see. They came to witness. Tarn lay on a pyre of wood, unarmored, but holding a sword. Not his blade, of course, but a fine nobleman's weapon nonetheless. The crowd was oddly silent as they regarded their fallen god. Jasna stepped from the tent. She was to speak first. Brother Lon would come second, followed finally by Dalinar. The king stood to the side with a group of upper nobility. His face still showed a haunted grief. For a short time, he had thought he still had a son. It almost would have been better had Renarin never returned. Jasna regarded the crowd, the nobility, and the dead man before her. She glanced to the side. Meridas stood by Dalinar. The man would retain his title as Parshan, as per Jasna's request. Dalinar needed the merchant's connections and wealth, for a time at least, to ensure that Alethkar survived the next few years. It would be a difficult time. So many men dead, so many resources expended. Meridas. She hated him, she realized. Not just because of his slimy personality and situational nobility. No, she hated what he represented about herself. That she would choose a man like him over Tarn simply because she somehow rationalized the match as being better for Alethkar. She looked at Tarn again. Then she raised a hand and held out a small black gemstone. Obsidian. Dalinar frowned. And the crowd murmured. They fell silent immediately after the gemstone began to glow. Jasna took a deep, fulfilling breath. The pure, clear harmony of her soul tone hummed in her ears, and she stroked the gemstone with its vibrations. The obsidian's dark light increased, and it rose above her hand, shining and spinning in the night. It was brilliant. Like a star floating above her palm. She could hear its music, the beautiful, unearthly note that she had feared for so long. It whispered to her, embraced her like a child who had wandered astray but finally returned. With a flick of her mind, she sent the gems spinning toward Tarn's corpse. The life gone from him, the Charon no longer had effect. The gemstone shattered, transferring its tone to the flesh, and Jasna held it steady, forcing the corpse's tone to change and match that of the gemstone. Tarn's body puffed instantly to smoke. Outcries began, yells of fear and of surprise, but Jasna ignored them. She stared upward toward the white smoke that floated away from the pyre. Away with it went her political career, her title and station, her place in the court. Away with it went everything that she had been, everything she had let define who she was. For those were the things that had kept her from him. When heralds die, she whispered, though by that time no one could hear her over the yells of outrage. Their bodies turned to smoke. It had been truth to him. She would let it be truth for her as well.
The peasant stood at the outskirts of the crowd, a little surprised by Jasna's display, but hardly shocked. Few things shocked him anymore.
though his features were those of the man who had gone to see Jasna a short time before, begging to take the herald's body. His posture was different. His hands still shook, that was no artifice, but he stood more straight-backed, his mannerisms somewhat more confident. "That was close," the peasant's companion said. He was a square-faced, hard-eyed man with a flat cut of firm hair.
"Not really," the peasant said. "Even if she hadn't awakened him, they would have burned the body.
If I'd realized she was going to have the funeral so soon, I wouldn't have bothered trying to talk her into giving me the corpse."
"Still too close," the companion said decisively. "If she'd waited just one more day to hold the funeral. Anyway, it's over now. He's gone for good this time."
The peasant nodded, eyes trailing the last bits of smoke evaporating above. Around the pyre, men were yelling in outrage, one in particular demanding an end to his marriage based on the fact that his wife had hidden her nature as an awakener from him. The peasant ignored such screams. He focused only on the smoke. No more immortality. Though they didn't age, they could no longer be reborn. The cycle was over. Death was final now. His companion was ready to leave, impatient to be moving as always. The peasant, however, was more thoughtful.
"Why did he come back, Nail?" he asked. "It's all supposed to be over."
"I don't know," Nail snapped. "What did I ever care about these things? Perhaps he found an Elskaller or something. There are several ways he could have gotten here." The peasant nodded, but then he asked the harder question.
"Do you think they're coming too?"
Nail snorted. "Don't be foolish, Priel. After this long, it's all over just like Jezreel promised. Come on, we've got a long walk ahead of us." Priel nodded obligingly, and he began to trail after his companion as he slipped away from the crowd. Priel paused, however, when he caught sight of someone standing at the front of the group with the nobleman, a man who had been hidden from Priel's sight earlier by the large pyre. He reached out with a shaking hand, catching Nail on the shoulder. "What?" Nail asked with annoyance.
"Nail,"
Priel whispered, pointing back toward the crowd.
"Look."
Nail paused, then suddenly grew tense. "Well, the man trailed off. It wasn't often that one saw Nail stunned silent.
"He's supposed to be dead," Priel said. "Dead for good. No coming back this time."
"I never did see a body," Nail said thoughtfully. "Did you?"
"No, but..."
"Well, I guess we were wrong then," Nail said, turning.
"We can't go, can we?"
"Why not?"
"Because," Priel said, floundering, "it's him."
"None of our business," Nail said. "That's what we promised 1,000 years ago. No interfering, no looking for one another. It's over. Let's go." Nail walked away, not waiting for his companion to follow. Priel lingered, looking toward the pyre. There, standing almost unnoticed by the nobleman, was an aged, beardless man. He had a full head of silvery hair, and he wore the robes of the new scholars people were calling Stormkeepers. He was probably posing as a simple, learned man from the south. However, Priel knew him to be someone different. That man was Ishar Elin, spiritual leader of the Heralds, founder of the Vorin religion, author of the Arguments, and designer of the Oath Gates. Ishar Elin, arguably the most powerful of the 10, undeniably the most wise. Ishar Elin, the man who had betrayed the other Heralds 1,000 years before, breaking the oath pact, and shattering the cycle of returns.